it's not like gay comedians are followed on stage by unicorns and rainbows to clue the audience in that they're gay. So in order for the jokes to get a laugh, comedians have to come out of the closet every time they perform. You have to land running, or in Mateo Lane's case, you have to land skipping.
Today, comedian Mateo Lane joins us to talk about the never-ending process of coming out to your audience every single time you go on stage. Listen as Mateo kikis with us about his appearance on the late-night Mexican talk show Noches con Platanito, where he and Drew Carey show star Diedrich Bader slapped on some wigs and lip-synced for their lives, his friendship with Bob the Drag Queen, and pissing off Vanessa Williams on the red carpet.
Plus, Christian fundamentalists are yet again offended by Starbucks holiday-themed cups.
And thousands of folks are now fearing they may have buried alive their hibernating hamsters.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Right now, you are listening to Feast of Fun because for the past 13 years, a listener just like you took the time to support this one-of-a-kind, in-depth programming. Won't you take a moment now to ensure that Feast of Fun is around for the future? Visit feastoffun.com/plus and access all 13 years of amazing shows.
Hello.
Buenos dias, Mateo Lane. Es Fausto Fernos.
And Mark Fillion, how are you today?
Buenos a la fiesta de felicidad.
Estoy muy bien, gracias.
Oye, pero yo te vi en el show Noches con Platanito y yo no sabía que tú hablabas español.
Tú sabes que yo hablo en español.
A mí me llamas usted, con respeto, por favor.
Ok, pero el problema es que yo soy italiano y mi abuelo es mexicano, pero yo aprendo como si hablar en italiano primero que español. Y ahora, cuando hablo español, yo hablo como en italiano porque no lo estudio a la escuela.
Bueno, pero tu español es fantástico.
Oh, gracias.
Maravilloso.
Muchas gracias.
La gente, cuando usted habla español o italiano, piensan que eres más heterosexual que cuando hablas español.
No. Well, en Italia sí. En Italia todos piensan que yo soy gay, que yo soy I don't have to say heterosexual in Spanish.
Heterosexual.
Heterosexual.
Or you say in Spanish straight.
Sí, toda la gente en Italia piensan que yo soy un heterosexual porque todos los hombres ahí son gay, or at least look it.
Let's switch the English language translator on this podcast.
I know, please. My Spanish, I lived with a Mexican for 2 years named Felicia, and so I was just like, you know, when you speak Italian, you're like, okay, just speak Spanish to me. And so I've learned like a busted Spanish-Italian version that I can communicate, but I mean, I just sound like Mario.
Well, when you're in Italy and you speak Spanish to somebody, it's like the Italians can pretty much understand what they get the gist of what you're trying to say, especially if you're naked.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're naked, you just, you know, with Italians, we just point.
Love is the universal language. I'm really kind of obsessed with your appearance on the, I guess this is Univision, the Noches con Platanito.
No, it was Estrella. It was Estrella.
It's the logo of Univision.
Perhaps.
And so how did your, like, somebody pitched this to you, obviously.
Well, I was in LA shooting something, and my manager, when I got to the show, I realized that a lot of American comedians go on the show. So it wasn't that strange, but they film it in Los Angeles, but Platanito's from Mexico City, so he comes in just to film and then goes back to Mexico City. But someone, I think they heard that my grandpa's Mexican, so they were like, oh, well, he's Mexican enough, get him on the show. So I was like, okay. And then I called my friend Felicia and I was like, do you know the show Noches con Platanito? She's like, oh, Noches con Platanito, si lo conozco. So, you know, I was like, all right, if she knows it, I'll go on.
And I guess the guy who hosts it, he's a comedian named Sergio Verduzco.
Yeah.
Who's been doing this clown character for his entire life.
Yeah. It was very classic Mexican TV. I mean, I was sitting next to a clown, the guy from Dietrich from the Drew Carey show, and then some guy on my right who was in a suit who just kept being like, Fantastico!
Well, Well, it sounds like you can't escape working with drag queens to some degree.
Okay, yeah, I mean, it's a part of my life now. When your best friend's a drag queen, your whole life is just full of drag.
Who's your best friend?
Bob the drag queen.
He is?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great.
He's coming over here Wednesday because we're doing Thanksgiving at his house because he's the one who has the most space, but he doesn't know how to cook, so I'm forcing him to come over to my house to help me make a pie.
That, you know, wait, you don't know how to cook or he doesn't know how to cook?
He doesn't know how to cook.
He I'll knows be doing how to a lot cook. Of he worked at Applebee's in the restaurant. He was a cook at Applebee's, so don't let him bullshit you. He knows how to cook.
He said he knows how to make a turkey cheddar something, and I think everyone in the group vetoed it.
I have film evidence that he knows how to chop onions.
I've seen it. He showed me last time I was in Chicago because he said he just made a complete mess out of your kitchen.
Yeah, yeah. He knows how to cook. He of all the queens on Cooking with Drag Queens, he's one of the most capable in the kitchen and really like apprehensive.
He's trying to get out of work is what he's trying to get you to cook for him.
Well, I think, you know what? Maybe it's baking because I'm baking also. But for Thanksgiving, we do lasagna or like a baked ziti or like Italian meatballs. Yeah, so that's what. Everyone's like, what do you bring? I'm like, a lasagna. What else do you eat for Thanksgiving? So I think he's going to help me make that.
Oh.
So did someone pitch this to you? They're just like, hey, since you're in LA, come on this all Spanish talk show. It's going to be weird. And we're going to have you and Diedrich Bader from the Drew Carey Show lip sync for your life.
Uh-huh. Basically. Well, it's so funny because when I did the show, you know, they were like, they were really concerned about... They wanted me to address the fact that I was gay. They were super concerned about, they didn't want anybody else to address it. The producers were like, Mateo has to address it. Like, I don't know what they were so concerned about. And I was like, okay. And then all the other female producers were like, it just, you know, being gay in Mexico is sometimes still a thing. So like, it'll be like this inspiration, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, will it or will it just be me in a shit wig rollerblading around to Fantasy, which I know they did not pay the rights to that song for. But, you know.
So how did you address it?
I just said, he said, tu eres italiano y mexicano, and then I said, y gay.
I mean, you're just everywhere. You're like a Drag Race girl who didn't get on Drag Race, but you're like at every television event. Anytime they need like a handsome, attractive, funny gay man, you're it.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'll be doing red carpets anymore because once you get into a fight with Vanessa Williams, I don't think they ask you back.
What happened?
It's not that I got into a fight with her, but when you do the red carpet, it's such a grueling process. Like, first of all, you stand there, you look like an asshole because it's just this game. Like, as a comedian, I don't give a shit about celebrities it's so strange because all these people who are on the red carpet, their whole lives are just sucking up to these celebrities. So I'm standing there and they gave me the gig because the producer Joe knew I love Mariah and Mariah was going to be there. So of course I showed up and, they have these handlers who run by you. And so the handlers decide whether you're worthy or not to talk to these celebrities. And so I started bribing them instead of saying like, you know, like, oh, please, you know, we really like to, I just say, doesn't, you know, Vanessa Williams want to talk to the gays? And then immediately they're like, oh yes, of course, please come. Let me just say this. I had great conversations with Ashley Judd, who I think is just short of 9 feet tall. She's so cool. She was so awesome. JoJo was great. Mariah talked to no one. She just stood there in a quinceañera dress and, you know, like it was like a bomb went off. I mean, celebrities were going, like everyone's going crazy for Mariah. Shaka Khan walked by me and I said to her handler, doesn't she want to talk to the gays? And he goes, no.
What was this event? What was the event?
It was the Divas Live for VH1.
Oh, girl, that's good. And so Vanessa Williams, and you've watched Ugly Betty, you know that she can go from zero to bitch in 1 second.
Well, I mean, first of all, I just want to say, I like Vanessa Williams. I'm the idiot in this situation. She came up and I had sworn that she had sang that song, My Christmas, Grown Up Christmas List. I swear it was her. No. And so I was like, love that Christmas song you sing. And she goes, and she like immediately like put her hand on her hip and she goes, well, which one? I have two albums. I'm like, well, then this is a piece of cake. And I mean, I should have said White Christmas, but I just said, the Christmas List. And she goes, I never sang that. And then I was like, and I don't know what came over me, but I was like, yeah, you did. And she goes, no, I didn't. And I go, well, I thought you did. And then it was just like It was like a hand came and just like pushed me away. And then Vanessa went to go talk to Refinery 29.
They have little signals that they do hand gestures to their handlers to let them know, like, get me away from this person.
But all the handlers are gay, and so they, you know, they were on my side. I was like, girl, and then they're like, okay, girl. And then, you know, that was it.
You got to research your subjects.
Yes.
Well, how would you have known? I mean, it's not like they gave you a list of who was going to be there.
No, they do. They prepare you very much. Mm-hmm. And I, of course, do zero homework.
So this is like it, like the cramming for the SAT. You're just like, I'll just wing it.
I don't know. I mean, they make it so easy for you. There's a producer on set who says to you, okay, coming up next is like whoever. Like there were two girls from Love and Hip Hop who were, I just kept saying when they were off camera that they look like Hep C. And they were like the worst people to talk to. And it just shocks me how, like, when people get like the tiniest bit of fame, they just treat it like they are just gonna be famous forever. And I was like, you guys, you can't behave this way, otherwise you're gonna be standing in a Statue of Liberty costume in Times Square handing out flyers in 2 years.
Well, you know, anytime we've ever done a red carpet event, we've done them for two of them for RuPaul's Drag Race, and the publicists don't know the names of the queens, and the queens are in costume. So some of them, you know, this is the first time anybody's ever seen them. You don't even know who the hell you're talking to.
We're like, I think that's Sasha Bell.
Oh, when I did, because I've done all the red carpet for RuPaul's too. Yeah. I become friends with the queens that I work with. So like when I was in Aspen Gay Ski Week, like I worked with Alaska, Katya, Ginger, Shangela, Lady Bunny. Like I know who they are, but then I didn't know. I don't watch the show. I didn't even watch Bob's season until like 4 months ago when he was like, you've never seen my season. I was like, no. And so we sat and watched his entire season together.
That just sounds so Bob to me.
It's also great to get his commentary. And then me being like an Italian woman, I am shrieking at the television. But yeah, so like, you know, I would Fifi O'Hara. Like I didn't know who that was until someone's like, this is Fifi O'Hara. And then I'm so nervous to say their name because I think I'm going to fuck it up. Mm-hmm. So I'm not like I'm horrible for red carpet.
Mm-hmm. Well, with drag queens, it's kind of okay. Like it's a little bit of like a wink and a nod and shade if you kind of like fuck up their name a little bit. They don't mind so much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you crazy? I'm still living down because like Katya kept changing the way she pronounced her name every time I met her. And so it was every single, like there's the internet's full of people criticizing me for mispronouncing her name.
Mm. Oh, the internet can go. I was on this show called Page Six. And, you know, it's like a TMZ of New York and there's like a panel and they talk about celebrities and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they asked me to come on the show and I was like, you got it. So then, they were all very scripted and then I was there just to like make jokes. And so there was they were doing a story on Mariah Carey, who I'm an expert on. So I was talking about Mariah and made some, you know, pretty lightly disparaging comments about her. And I think I got the most tweets I've ever gotten in my entire life of how I'm going to hell and my mother should have gotten an abortion, which I wrote back. I'm glad you're pro-choice. But, you know, it was just like, it's insane how angry people get on the internet. It's like, just calm down, everyone.
They love their divas, that's for sure. And they will come for anybody who attacks them.
They do. They do. Mm. But the thing is, I love Mariah. I've seen her live 8 times and I'm just frustrated with her because I think she could be doing better. Let me just put it this way. At the Divas Live show, when I went and saw it live, you know, Mariah lip-synced the whole song. When Patti LaBelle came out, bitch is like in her 60s or 70s. She was so amazing. I swear to you, people who couldn't walk or see could walk and see after her performance. I mean, she was so good. And I was like, there's no excuse for anyone else. Like, if Patti in her early hundreds can sing into the stratosphere, there's no reason everyone else has to lip-sync and all this other bullshit.
Don't you kind of like, though, Mariah Carey's half-hearted attempts at choreography where she's just like, I'm going to have these guys just move around me and I'm just going to flop and like phone it in?
It's very Britney Spears. Like Britney now in Vegas is just like Weekend at Bernie's and she, you know, she just has like, and I don't know if she's ever, I don't know if she dances, but I do know she's done, she's doing Tai Bo is what she's doing.
What is Tai Bo?
Tai Bo is that like late 90s workout program with that guy who was, you know, you basically punch the air for like 3 hours.
Well, you look fantastic, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much.
I mean, you know, we remember you from way back here in Chicago, and you're like, I will never set foot in a gym, blah, 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 you know. And then you moved to New York City, and you're like, you're still the Mateo that we know and love, but also you're like you're like celebrity Mateo Lane now.
No, you know what it is? It's like when I used to go to the gym, but then it was like, I didn't know what to do and I was confused. And then you feel even more frustrated because you're like, I would go to the gym and be like, how does that guy have muscles? What is he doing? I'm not doing. So then my sister, who is like an IFBB fitness world champion, like body trainer, I called her like 2 years ago and I was like, what the fuck do I need to do? And she's like, it's all about your diet. So she wrote me a plan and a meal plan and a diet plan and a workout plan. And I just follow what she does and keep updated with her. And she changes it for me. And it's basically like a family business. I'm also a person who loves, I'm a creature of habit. So I like routines. I like going to the gym. I like, my schedule's so all over the place. It's like the 1 hour of the day I get to myself and just get to focus on weights.
So are you like measuring out the gravy before you put it in your meal?
First of all, it's sauce, not gravy. And
that's an Italian thing. It's a regional thing for people out there, depending on where you come from. Like there's some actual Italian Americans that call that red sauce you put on pasta. They call it gravy.
Yeah, what? There's a big argument amongst the Italian community of what you call it, and it is pronounced sauce.
Yeah, and I feel like the gravy is like a Long Island or like East Coast kind of thing, right?
It is. But even the East Coast Italians sort of argue over what it's supposed to be called. I mean, I don't know. And half the people who call it gravy don't even know how to speak Italian. So it's like, it's all a mess.
But I mean, are you like making all your food ahead of time? And I mean, because you're trapped. I'm looking here at your itinerary on your website, and you're like, you're performing more than some of these winners from RuPaul's Drag Race. You're like in a new town every single day almost.
It's a lot of like running around and filming. And it's, you know, I was talking to, once you like see Drag Race and how it actually works behind scenes when they're on tour, there's a very, the life of a drag queen and a comedian, it's almost the exact same grind, except for the preparation time. But like, you know, they get ready for like 3 hours, but similar
grind. Brush your teeth and put on a clean shirt.
And that's barely what I do.
Yeah, but you also have to come up with new material. Just drag queens mostly just do racist jokes that you get from the internet. and ask who's gay in the audience?
Where are my gays in the audience? At? Where are my lesbians at? Where are my bisexuals at? Where are my
if they're transgenders at? Queen, but yeah,
I'm just kidding.
No, I do prep all my meals, and I do. Yeah, I don't know. I don't love working out. Still, I hate doing it. I hate going. I hate being at the gym, but I like the results. And do I what?
You don't like the locker room?
I actually hate the locker room. I will never go into a steam room in New York City if my life depended on it.
Well, you're kind of like now kind of a household name in gay circles. And like, you know, people know you from a lot of these projects, and you were sort of like Logo's go-to gay to save the channel with Fire Island.
Like, did you watch me and Vinny?
I did, you know, and that was really charming. I mean, the audio was terrible. But, I was like, maybe they should have put microphones on you guys.
We did. We did have microphones.
You did? On your lapels? Like lavaliers? Yes.
Yeah. I actually had a lot of fun doing that because
really?
Vinny. Yes.
I'm not joking. I'm like, I could have sworn it was just the on camera sound.
I mean, girl, I'm not kidding either. And I'm not shocked it sounded like shit. But, that was a lot of that was interesting because I mean, you know, as a gay and an Italian, I just want to hate everything I see on television. So, I had to like really tone it down. But as I watched the show, now I know a lot of the guys on that show. As I watched the show, I just was, you know, like to me, the most redeeming character was Patrick, who I have texted and tweeted at and I have never met in person, but he was the show missed the boat. On the sense that they could see each other every weekend rather than be with each other for like 4 weeks straight. So every time they saw each other, it was like they were learning. They were sort of like you know, they were like relaxed when they saw, like, there was no drama on the show. It was like Jorge or whatever his name was just crying because his boyfriend in Spain didn't say I love you on FaceTime. So, you know, Patrick was the best part of that show because he would start drama and he was funny. And I was like, ah, thank you, Patrick. And then he messaged me out of the blue and was like, thanks for all the positive things you've said about me on that show.
Well, I could see, like, if, you know, if you had even more muscles and a cute little chihuahua, Patrick would kind of be like your gay best friend or your boyfriend.
I don't know. I mean, first of all, boyfriend. I haven't had a boyfriend in 7 years now. Aww. So that is...
Your comedy career is your boyfriend.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, it is. And it sucks because the gays never show up at shows. So it's not like I'm getting laid. Like straight guys go on shows and there's just women who are like, ah, he talked in a microphone. And they just, you know, they call him chuckle fuckers.
Oh, yeah.
And gays, they show up and cross their arms like, we hear this at brunch. Where's Kathy Griffin?
Well, and for you, you're performing for a lot of straight venues. So it almost, and I was listening to your podcast that you put out in August. You feel like your life is a never ending story of coming out. Everywhere you go.
I think once, like, if in you know, hopefully one day you make it big, then people know and I can move over. But, you know, people don't know me. So when I walk on stage, I mean, gay places, yeah, but it's like, but like straight people, if I walk on stage, you just have to address it. I mean, it's not a problem. I'm not like, I make it funny and I move on quickly. The thing I say now is like, when I go on stage, because now they've seen like 7 straight people. So when I go on stage, I grab the mic and they, you know, their clapping is dying down and I'll just say, hey, thanks so much. I'm obviously gay. And then they laugh and I get it out of there and then I can move on to the rest of my material.
Do you find that certain jokes people want you to do? Like, if I came to see you perform, I would be really mad that you'd never said pizzazz.
I did a show the other day and 2 gays came to see me and they kept asking me to do my whistle tones.
Yeah. Would you do that for us one more time?
I don't even know if I can right now. There we go.
Yay. And say pizzazz.
Pizzazz.
It's interesting, and I heard Chris Rock talking about this, is that the difference between comedy and music is that musicians are forced for the rest of their lives to perform the same song over and over again. And as a comedian, if you do just one of those jokes again, like the Starbucks routine, people will, like, you know, tear into you.
I'm not even famous. I haven't done my Starbucks routine since I did it on Colbert, which was in July. And that was a pretty recent joke. I mean, that was like a 5-month-old joke, which in the world of comedy, that is not long. Yeah. But I did it on Colbert, and now it's like it just sort of washed away. I don't do it anymore.
So it's kind of like a way to retire a joke is to do it on television?
I think so, yeah. Typically when people do like a special, then that's like them saying, okay, goodbye to these jokes. And then you move on to the new ones. For me, I feel like, you know, I'm a little more Joan Rivers in the sense that there's like pressure to put out comedy, like for the big comedians, right? To do a new hour every year. To me, I don't know if it works that way. I feel like you put out a special when it's ready. Like if it takes me 1 year or it takes me 6 years, then I'll just wait.
Well, it's an organic process. And for me, I think your musical training as an opera singer really helps your comedy because you think about these jokes as music. And, you know, like for I'll never get tired of hearing you do the Mariah Carey squeaks or the Liza Minnelli pizzazz. Because to me, it's about tapping into that part of my brain that's into music and not necessarily just hearing the same joke again.
Well, it's funny you say that because I do think musicians have better timing than non-musicians as comedians. A lot of comedians, actually, there are a lot of musician comedians, like people who have musical backgrounds, and their timing is much better because, you know, it for me as a musician and a singer, when I'm doing a joke, if I can hear the laughter and I know that if I jump in right now, I'll get the bigger laugh. If I wait just a half a second longer, it's too long. And if I go too early, it's too early. So, you know, the rhythm of the way you tell the jokes and how you speak and how you do a show, especially when I'm on the road and I'm doing an hour, you know, it's very musical. You can't just you can't start at a 10 and plateau. You have to take them through a journey, and that's where your musical background really helps.
And so for you and talking to your friends, do you feel like we're just kind of like stuck for the rest of our lives, like some sort of a Greek torch, you know, the guy who had to roll up the
Sisyphus,
roll up the boulder up the hill, that as gay people were always coming out and it just never ends as long as we're in some sort of heterosexual atmosphere. Because I think about myself, like coming out of the closet when I was 18 and your heart is racing and you're really nervous and you fear that everybody's going to like not talk to you because you came out as gay. And so you start wearing like those rainbow bracelets and necklaces and all this rainbow and pink triangle crap, you know, that you could get at a pride parade from a like vendor. Mm-hmm.
Or when you do your code switching or you change your speech to just sound more gay. So people just, they just know.
You create a what I call the rainbow aura that precedes you. It's like, so when people meet you and talk to you, they're not going, I wonder if he's gay.
I feel like I lead with it. I don't even try it. And I'm just like, I was gay before I was even out and people thought I was gay. So now that I'm out, they definitely know I'm gay. But, you know, I don't know. I think it's getting better. I mean, there's no famous out male comedian who's gay, who's like the level of a Richard Pryor or a Bill Burr or Jerry Seinfeld. Like they just don't exist. They do not exist. So this is really the first time that out comedians are doing comedy in the straight circuit. You know, more than, I mean, there's been a few in the past, but this is the first time where like a real group of us are coming up and doing it. And it's interesting to watch not just the audiences respond, but also the comedians, because there really is no predecessor to what type of comedy we can or can't do or the things we can and can't talk about, because it's the first time anyone is hearing anyone talk about it publicly. So it's very interesting on that side to just hear and see how this is evolving and see what type of comics are coming from that. Mm-hmm. You know, like me and Joel Kambooster started with each other and we're very different from each other. And you know, it's what, and me and John earlier, Joel and John earlier, Julio Torres or Solon and Giorgio or Guy Branum or James Adomian. And we're all so wonderfully different from each other, but still all connected because we're gay and we're just like the few in this group of hundreds who are all straight, thousands.
It really is a pretty new phenomenon to have out gay comedians. And when we first started doing this podcast back in 2005, it was hard to find a gay comedian. You know, and I think the first one that we actually had on the show was Bill Cruz, who, you know, and Adam Carolla would come on as well. And it was like, those were the only gay comedians we knew.
Right. And you know, it's interesting because it's just Bill Cruz, by the way, who I saw in L.A. last month, and I adore him and I love him and he's my favorite. Yeah, it's just really interesting because you still deal with stereotypes. And it's so funny to me how there's this, you get people saying, oh, well, that's too gay, or, oh, I like you because you're not too gay for me, or, oh, we thought this or that. And you're like, well, what's too gay? You know, straight people have been talking about marriage for 50, 60 years, and I can't talk about one Grindr date? That's somehow hack? You know, it's like, you have to sort of level with yourself and say, I don't care if I'm being too gay. This is actually, I mean, my best friend's a fucking drag queen, and I take it in the ass. Yeah, this is my life. This is the life I live. You know, I'm not doing it to be funny. I'm doing it to be myself. And I think it's interesting too for gay audiences, very new for gay audiences to have male gay comedians. I mean, Brad Locally has been putting in the work forever and Mario Cantone, but you know, when I do gay shows, you know, if you're not a woman or you're not a stripper or not a drag queen, they don't know what to do with you. They do not know what to do with you. Gays associate comedy with Kathy Griffin and Joan Rivers and Margaret Cho. Women. They associate it with women, essentially. And so do I. That was my influences. Those are the only people speaking my language when I was a kid. How could I look up to, you know, Richard Pryor or George Carlin or Bill Hicks? They weren't speaking my language. Joan Rivers was speaking my language. So that's why we were so attached to these women, because they were the only ones speaking the same way we were. And now that there's gay men doing it, there's part gays who are excited and open about it, and the other part who are a little arms crossed and not sure what to make of you.
Well, it's kind of like Margaret Cho said, I am the one who I want. And what she meant by that is she was always looking for Asian American women comedians to inspire her as an artist. And she finally discovered that, you know, you have to really draw that inspiration from inside your own community, from within.
Yeah. And, you know, I make no bones about how open and proud I am of being gay. And, you know, I have a great group of friends who are all gay that keep me level-headed, and you know, I think it can get weird sometimes. I mean, you can feel the pressure from everybody around you, from gays, from straights, who want you to be a specific way. But yeah, at the end of the day, you just kind of have to speak your own truth, and then people either like it or they don't.
Well, I noticed that like a lot of negative backlash usually comes from inside our own community. And it's like every now and then you like we were at the Austin International Drag Festival and Alex Jones, the guy who does those InfoWar videos, infiltrated the festival. And he was going like, these drag queens are destroying America's youth, you know, and it was just so in some ways it was refreshing to get hate coming from people that are not gay.
Yeah. You know, I this is what I feel about it. This is my opinion. I think when you, and it's getting better now, but especially even my generation, your generation, generations and generations before, when you come out of the closet, I mean, I always make the joke. The first gay person I saw on television was C-3PO. You know, I like, you know, no
one Star Wars holiday special?
Yeah. Well, then B. Arthur was in that one too, but yeah. You know, no one, it's not like we learn about our culture in school. We're not represented. We're not seen. I wouldn't see myself on TV. And everything you did as a kid was to disguise the fact you were gay so that you weren't caught, that you weren't found out, that you weren't, you know, everything is like a secret. And you are just from zero to whatever age you come out, it's all about self-hate and all about putting up this Frankenstein monster of bits and pieces of things you think people will accept you for. And when you come out of the closet, you have to seek your history. You have to seek your culture. You have to seek and get over the fact that you're gay. I mean, it took a long time for me to accept, you know, if I got called faggot on the street, it doesn't sting anymore. I mean, if someone calls me faggot, I say, thank you. You know, 10 years ago, that would have burned me because you're still under the guise of I cannot be discovered or all hell will break loose. So a lot of gay men have a difficult time seeing other gay men represented because there's so few of us represented. When you see someone who's representing us, we get mad because you think that's not who I am. I'm not that person. That's not who I am. Don't make me look bad. Well, right. Of course, that's not who you are. You know, you can be gay and be different than someone else who's gay. And we have to learn to accept everyone who's slightly different. You know, I feel like, for example, I was at a party a year ago at the Oscars, and it was Sam Smith versus Lady Gaga up for the Oscar, right? Sam Smith won. The gays were booing. And I thought, what are we doing? Like, what? And of course, he said some really ridiculous comments, but also like I said, no one's teaching us our history. No one's, I'm not sitting in school at 13 hearing about gay people. So, you know, we have to forgive ourselves and be nicer to ourselves and realize that, you know, there's room for everybody. And I think the more that we're represented in the media, not just as an accessory to women or as a secretary or whatever, you know, the less pressure we'll have on ourselves as gay men to be angry about the few gay men who make it and are represented in media.
So if there's a sequel to Sex and the City in the movie, you'll replace Mario Cantone.
I'll replace Miranda.
She's not going to do it.
Samantha.
She doesn't want to do. Mm-hmm. She says that's a role for somebody else to play.
She's right. Done. Why are we doing Sex and First of all, Sex and the City 2 was a terrible movie.
It was the greatest films ever made. You take those words back.
No, I mean, literally there was no sex and there was no city. So it was like, okay. So
but there were a lot of camels. It was the Ishtar.
First of all, a couple things about Sex and the City. Sarah Jessica Parker is the worst written character on television. I cannot think of a more insufferable, selfish human being. We don't need her back on screen. And then, you know, that's Carrie, not the actress. But then right. Charlotte, who is she's like 40 some years old and she still doesn't know like anything about sex. Like they're all so embarrassing. I mean, no, they don't need to bring that show back. It had its moment. Let's move on.
Well, let's talk about the Starbucks cups.
Oh, I have plenty of opinions on the Starbucks cups.
And every year, I guess, you know, Starbucks and a lot of retailers do this. They rebrand their products for the holiday season because, you know, holiday rebranding gets people inspired to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And get out of the house.
It's something new. It's something different. It's limited time. So it's like, oh, I have to get it while I can.
And, you know, Starbucks cups, I would say they're pretty innocuous. They change them red and then they put like, you know, peace, love, goodwill to all men and people or whatever. And Christians are very threatened by the expression peace and love.
Well, there's some hands being held portrayed on the cups, but there's also a video that goes along with it. And it's like it's, you know, it's a woman holding this cup of coffee and another woman and it's on a table and another woman comes up and they're kind of like holding hands as they warm themselves with this cup of coffee. And it looks like they may be going in for a kiss, but it just, you know, they could be sisters. We don't know. But of course, you
intimacy.
Know, you know, there's some kind of female intimacy there. And so, of course, the, you know, the Christians are very upset by that.
Here's my thing. Starbucks, they have a green cup, they're mad. They have a red cup, they're mad. Now they have a cup where it's like, I swear to you, they have like a Kwanzaa cake on it, and they're still mad. It's like Christians will not be happy until they see baby Jesus crowning from Mary's vagina on that goddamn cup. It is ridiculous. It is a goddamn... That shows this country's wealth and priorities, that people are furious over a cup of, number one, coffee. That's not so great.
I have my coffee cup right here. Now, the thing is, though, too, is like it takes just, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Starbucks actually pays people to hate on it so that it gets some controversy going just so the blogs will write about it and get it going. Because, you know, any kind of controversy is usually pretty good.
Let the haters be the motivators.
You know,
and I mean, I certainly went after Starbucks in my late night set. And let me just say this. No one paid me. I would love a paycheck to hate Starbucks.
You didn't get a gift card from them?
No, I
well, did anybody like see that bit? And you're basically just saying that like Starbucks baristas are like the, you know, it's not a very good career move. You're sort of making fun of their job.
It's not a you're not a barista. You know, like go to Rome. There, that's a barista. That's that's a 58-year-old man who's been making coffee for, you know, 30 some goddamn years, is dedicated, understands the craft. You go to Starbucks, they don't even say how are you. I also New York City, but like you go to Starbucks here, I have walked up to people who have, they're behind, they're just, they're so it's like they went to the University of Mean. Like they just learn how to be mean and whittle you down to the nubbins. And I walk up and I say like, hi, and they will just stare at you. And then I'll literally go, okay, then. And I have worked every odd job in the world, and I have managed to be – when you are working with strippers at 4 a.m. and drag queens at Atmosphere in Chicago while old people throw peanuts at you because you're singing Streisand and not stripping – you still say, hi, how are you? So, you know, I'm like, it's just ridiculous. And they're pushing a button for the espresso. They don't know anything about espresso, cappuccino. It's just ridiculous. So they're not baristas. They're just employees at Starbucks.
I don't know. We have plenty of baristas for Starbucks. I just saw them today. And they're like, hi, Mark, how are you? I'm like, I'm doing quite well, thank you. They didn't give me free coffee, which is always disappointing. But well, you know,
it might be a New York thing. Yeah, because
it's a New York thing. Because here in Chicago, the Starbucks at the mall where I work at, at the end of the day, he literally goes, what would you like for free? Always, every single day.
Because they have to throw that stuff out.
But no, he gives me like free coffee and free drinks. And all this.
Get him in
I don't
trouble.
Want. Well, he just doesn't know where it is.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's like it could be anywhere on the planet.
It's still nice. I have never gotten a free thing in New York in my entire life.
I'm so sorry you're stuck in that horrible city.
Actually, you know what? The first time I came to New York, I'm like such a Chicago Midwesterner. Like, I came from New York. I was 22. And I went to my very first gay bar, which was called G Lounge at that time. And I walk in, and it's crowded and this and that. People are screaming. And I go up to the bar, and the bartender goes, what do you want? And I said, hi, how are you? And he like stopped and looked at me. And he goes, I'm fine, thanks. And I said, may I please have a Stella? He turned around, made my drink, came back, and he goes, I'm the house. You're the first person to ask me how I'm doing tonight.
Aww, that's so sweet.
But now I'm a bitter New Yorker. Now I'm just like angry at everyone.
Good guy Mateo still manages to care about other people.
That's up for debate.
You and Bob are working on a comic book.
We are. We're doing, we have a comic book called Kick-Ass Drag Queen. We're going to be writing the next series. If you can imagine, mine and Bob's schedule doesn't make it easy to sit down and write together. We have a comic book called Kick-Ass Drag Queen, which you can follow on Instagram. And it's just a story about a drag queen who's a coffee barista by day, which is based off of Bob and is a drag queen superhero by night.
Oh, cool. How did you and Bob come together?
We actually, you know, it's we met actually because of this show.
Which one?
This show, Feast of Fun.
Oh, us.
I
thought you were talking about like Drag Race or something.
No. It was like 3 or 4 years ago, And it was like right after Pride. And so like the streets have kind of emptied out and people are whatever. And I'm walking and there was a guy eating on a corner who yelled at me. He goes, Mateo Lane. Because of course, you know, Bob has the memory of a bear trap. He remembers everyone and everything. And so I'm like, yeah. And he goes, hi. He goes, I listened to you on Feast of Fun. And I said, oh, great. That's awesome. And he goes, my name's Bob. He goes, you know, like I'm a performer. I'm a drag queen. I'm like, oh, cool. Nice to meet you. I knew nothing of drag.
And you were like, yeah, please don't touch me.
No, I was surprised anyone recognized me at all. I was like, what? And then like, he said he had performed at Caroline's, which was a place that I perform at a lot. And so mm-hmm. I asked the wait staff, I said, do you know a drag queen who would perform here? I didn't remember his name. And they're like, what does he look like? And I was like, I just met a black man on the street who said he was a drag queen and performing at Caroline's. And they said, oh, well, we have a waiter who used to do drag. And they showed me pictures. And I was like, no, I was like, that's not what he looked like. And they were like, oh, I don't know. And then like a year later, someone was like, oh, we've got to go see Bob the Drag Queen. He has a show at Barracuda. And I said, oh my God, that's what his name was. Bob the Drag Queen. So I went to the show, and then in the middle of the show, it was so crowded. It was right mm-hmm. before Drag Race. It was real crowded. And, you know, he looks and on the microphone, he goes, Mateo Lane, I know you. You can't hide from me. And I was like, oh my God, Bob. And then I started doing red carpet. And then after that, Bob and I exchanged phone numbers. And then he emailed me or texted me about like Kick-Ass Drag Queen. This is like over a year ago. And then we met right after he won, and we met at a diner and like stayed up all night at the diner and drew and laughed. And then, I don't know, then we just became friends. And then I met all of his group of friends. And then now we're all like a little crew, the five of us, and we're all just best friends. And yeah, I don't know. It just happened really like sweet. Overnight. Yeah. And it's cool because Bob is so normal and nice, and I forget that he's like world famous, but, you know, he's just like the best guy.
Oh, that's great. It's nice to hear that. Feast of Fun bringing people together. There's people that have fallen in love because of this show.
They did.
Yeah, they've met.
Well, I'm still waiting for that, so I'm bitter.
It could happen. Your husband could be listening to this podcast right now.
And tell him to tweet husband. At me.
What would you say to him?
To my future husband?
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably, you know, start listening up on Maria Callas. No, Suck My Dick would come way after Maria Callas. He needs to know about her.
Well, it's nice that being gay is no longer a liability for comedians, and instead it's not knowing Vanessa Williams' mm-hmm. entire song catalog. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's still a liability for a lot of people. It was like, who's the gay comedian that just wrote that blog entry about the table? So I guess in comedy they have this
Guy
table.
Branum.
Guy Branum, right? And mm-hmm. there's a table, and it's like, so it's all filled with like these white middle-aged men and like a few women, but there's no gay person in there. I don't think there's a woman of color involved in there or anything, and so it's like it's this exclusive like club. Can you talk a little bit about the table?
Sure. Actually, I just listened. If you want to listen to Guy's response to the sets, the Comedy Cellars, which he's referring to, it's a club here in New York City. It's a club I don't work, actually, but it's kind of ironic to this conversation. But so in light of everything that's happening with Louis C.K. and all these men being accused, you know, comedians and comedy, we're taking a good look at ourselves right now and trying to analyze how to conduct ourselves in every which way, shape, or form. So Guy wrote this article, which I read. I'm friends with Guy, wrote this article. And I think, you know, even he agreed in the podcast with the seller that he rushed the article because a lot of things, you know, he didn't say that gay men and women of color don't work at the table, because that's just not true. I could list Jessica Kirsten, Judy Gold, Emma Willman. I mean, there's Marina Franklin. There's Joyelle Johnson. There's a lot of women and gays who work at the Mayron. There's a lot of gays and women who work there. Now, there's not a ton. But there's also just not a ton in comedy. And so I think the article was written in a response to the anger on the sort of patriarch we deal with in comedy and what that's like being a person of color or queer or a woman in comedy versus being a straight white man. But I think the article linked some things together that didn't connect. And, you know, he was speaking about working at the Comedy Cellar. He says it was a metaphor, but the Cellar said, no, this is damaging to our reputation because the facts just aren't true. So you should listen to Guy's response and the Cellar's response, because I know I love Guy, but I don't work at the Cellar, but there's a lot of diversity on the Cellar lineups. But generally speaking, in comedy, there's just not a lot of diversity anywhere. And I think that that's an issue that should be brought up and should be talked about and should be worked on, because I think it's happening now, because there's voices from different backgrounds who are getting the first time to be heard and to be seen, and to, you know, it's really interesting to hear different perspectives rather than, you know, a straight white guy who's talking about marriage. So,
but I'm a little unclear on what the issue here with the Cellar Bar and Guy's article.
Well, I think that he was trying to claim that the group of men that are at the Cellar were protecting Louis C.K. and knew about the allegations, and as the boys club, quote unquote, used their, I don't know, patriarch power to protect him over the victims. And that divulged into a whole other conversation about gays in comedy and women in comedy and people of color in comedy. And and then, you know, he was talking about the table, because there's a table that all the comedians sit at, and how there's no people of color or diversity at the table. And I think he even changed the article to correct what he said. So Guy, you know, it's not like Guy is an idiot. He's, you know, learning and changing and adapting. And, but, you know, I think you know, like for me, it's like, I don't know if I want to speak on something if I'm not going to add to the conversation. But I think that the article was definitely something that got people talking and got people to talk about these issues that may not have been talked about before. So in that sense, Guy did a good job, but it's difficult to say, because I think, you know, there's a lot of people who work there who are upset, because it's just not true. A lot of things that were written in the article.
I think, you know, a lot of this change in the way we're thinking about harassment and the oppression of others is a good opportunity for us who are artists or entertainers who have some type of success to learn a little bit more about humility and about opening up our hearts to the pain and suffering of others. And I think it's easy to get caught up in when your career is going well and you have, you know, money and you have an audience and you're doing really fantastic work and you're performing out there, to sort of step back a little bit from this hype, this hubaloo, this Lollapalooza, and learn, remember that, you know, ultimately comedy and entertainment is a service oriented job, and you're there for the audience and not for yourself.
I also think too, as a comedian or any entertainer, when you, like for me, when I started out in comedy, you know, you do open mics and the community is huge. You know, there's hundreds of open micers, and, you know, the more you get and the higher you go, the community around you tends to shrink a little, the people around you, you know, so it's not like my life is full of hundreds of comics anymore. It becomes a small group of friends that I have, and then I'm just focused on work and travel and doing this and doing that. And, you know, so there's a lot of times that comedians are so self-involved, we're not aware of the things we're doing that are affecting others around us who are trying to reach the same goals as us. And, you know, systemic sexism and racism and homophobia and all these things that are sort of built into the structure of just society, you know, these are difficult things to knock down. These are difficult things to educate people about. And I think in times like this, if you're a person in a situation or a position who is feeling disenfranchised or marginalized in any way, education is the best way to go about moving forward. But a lot of times people can get demonized. Like, I don't know, the thing that happened with Guy in the Cellar, you know, it's like, I think everyone's intentions were seemingly from the best from their side. And then they met and it was like, oh, you know, like there's a lot of problems here, and that this article was written a specific way and we feel this way. And but at least they talked. I love that they talked. I love that Noam, who owns the Cellar, brought him in, sat him down, talked to him, had people there who worked the Cellar for years and people who've been there brand new and all different types of voices, and they all got to have a real open conversation. Because I actually think that the problem with Facebook and Twitter and all this stuff is that people are talking at each other, not listening to each other. You know, like there's no moderator on Facebook, and I don't even go on Facebook anymore, because everyone's just so angry and you can't, you know, I always take what Gloria Steinem says. She says the only way to have a conversation with someone is if you can, if all of your senses are present. Mm. And that way you can have a real conversation with someone. When you're typing, you're just typing at, you're not typing listening to people. And so it even though it's helpful for the exchange of information and for it to be available to everyone and for people's voices to be heard, the other problem is that people are not really hearing each other, and it creates a whole other problem. So I like that Guy went on the Seller podcast. I like that they talked about it openly, because Guy is not the enemy here. You know what I mean? Guy is not the enemy any way, shape, or form. He's been through some shit. He's a smart guy. And it was nice to know that people at the Seller, they're not the enemy either. You know, they've been through their own shit. And so it's good that we're talking and hearing each other and listening. I think listening is very important.
Well, part of it is like a lot of people feel powerless to address some of the injustice that they experience in their everyday lives. And I think social media in some ways can be a really effective tool to organizing for political change. But ultimately, it also is kind of an opiate of the masses to allow people to attack people in their own community, in their own circle of friends, without really like expanding outward into the greater society. And so one thing I observe is, and I don't know if this is true for like the comedy scene, but here in Chicago, I observe a lot of the drag queens calling each other out on social media, and sometimes it comes across as they're trying to tear each other apart so they can get the gigs at the clubs that they want.
Well, they tear each other apart also too is just so that they can feel better about themselves or make themselves like the center of like, oh, look, everybody's commenting on my takedown of this queen and look how important I am now.
Right. But also we have to remember entertainers, especially drag queens and comedians, these are deeply insecure people. I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like we're dealing with a very particular type of person. And, you know, so it's so funny because on the outside you think, oh, these drag queens are so powerful and strong and they are powerful and strong and brave. But the other side is, you know, as any performer is someone who's looking for acceptance and validation and someone who's working very hard. And so, and also with drag queens, I mean, a lot of drag culture is just kind of calling each other out, you know, with tongue in cheek and sort of, I mean, if it gets serious, then it's another thing, but like, every drag queen show I go to, they're always calling out other drag queens. I think that's just in the nature of drag.
And so, you know, I think it's important to, you know, distinguish the two of those things. And really, like, if you can talk to that person face to face, I think it's much healthier than it is to sort of turn to social media and use that as a, you know, in some ways as a bully pulpit.
Right. I feel bad because I don't want Guy or anyone else to listen to this article and think I'm talking shit about anybody. You know, I'm just trying to like,
I think you laid it out pretty well, saying that, you know, about his conversation and everything.
I'm still confused on what's going on.
Well, it's a conversation that definitely needs to have about diversity in comedy. And, you know, these tastemakers having a lot of control and allowing, you know, these terrible things to fester.
Mateo, this is why we need to seize the tools of production. And that's why I say, like, you know, podcasts and social media, and a lot of LGBT people are like Josie's Juice Bar Cabaret in San Francisco was a great example. And Peaches Christ is another person who, you know, is not really too caught up in participating in these systems of power, but they create their own systems. And, you know, it's a harder path, but ultimately it's a healthy one.
Yeah, and I love that. I mean, again, the social media can be great. Podcasting's awesome. You taking voices that that had no space to be anywhere before, and now with YouTube and social media and all these things, podcasting, I mean, you can create a center and a base for your voice and for people to want to hear that. I mean, that's an amazing thing, you know. And I wonder if a lot of rights and gay rights, etc., have made a lot of progress in the past 10 years because it was the first time if we're like, okay, no one's going to give us a platform to speak on, I'll do it myself and use the medium to do it that way.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's certainly effective, because if it wasn't, Republicans wouldn't be so busy trying to destroy the internet. And by that, I mean, on Thanksgiving Eve, which is just a couple days away, the FCC is about to pass new rules that are going to be rescinding net neutrality and basically allowing internet providers like Comcast and Verizon from charging people to reach users at faster speeds, effectively sort of cutting out the possibility of YouTube or podcasts to continue doing what they do. So these might be the last days of the internet as we know it.
Well, I mean, you know, hopefully, you know, last, what was it, two Tuesdays ago, you know, we was promised that the pendulum swinging the other way. I mean, the FCC has been trying to take people like Howard Stern down for years and years and years. And, you know, hopefully, hopefully good happens.
Well, I feel like you're a person who, no matter what happens, we will still be able to connect with you somehow.
I hope so. You know, unless I give it all up and move to Fiji and sell coconuts for the rest of my life.
Well, because you're a person who has a lot of like skills, and it's like you worked as a commercial illustrator for years. I mean, that's something you could always fall back upon.
I hope I don't have to. Yeah, it's so funny. I've like been drawing my whole life, and now I'm like, every time I try and get away from it, I still end up falling back into something where I'm drawing. So, yeah.
Well, it's sometimes like, you know, these things kind of feed each other. And I always tell people, it's like, don't, when you're an artist, it's like, you want to look for a lot of different types of disciplines to express yourself in, because it allows your brain not to get stuck in a rut.
Yeah, I think most people who are artists, yeah, I think they have like five or six things they're always working on, because, you know, like if I'm too knee deep into stand up, I will go sing at a cabaret show or a jazz club with my friend Henry who plays piano, or, you know, go to the duplex and just sing, because it's like I need another form of expression, because your brain can get too caught up with one thing and it sort of eases that tension. Or draw, or go to the gym, or do any, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can, I just think as long as you're finding multiple ways to express yourself, it sort of takes away from the pressure of the main focus.
Now, we've lost two pretty big names in the last 24 hours. Charles Manson, he didn't murder anybody.
He had people murder
but
people.
But he was like basically, he was like the most evil celebrity blogger ever in history.
Well, he was crazy. He was also racist, and he was paranoid, and he was a cult leader, and he hated Hollywood because he didn't get a music career.
But he was obsessed with Hollywood too, mm-hmm. And so he organized the Beatles, and so he organized people to basically start killing celebrities. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was just notorious for years and years and years, and a lot of like tabloid television for years. You know, Geraldo Rivera's interview with Charles Manson's one of the most famous interviews of all time, and. You know, it's not good to speak ill of the dead, but when I heard that Charles Manson was dead, I said, good.
But now his ghost is out there, and he could be coming for you.
I'm not scared of him.
Yeah, good luck.
And then Della Reese died.
I saw that, yeah.
I mostly remember her from that awful TV show, Touched by an Angel, but I guess her birth name was Della Reese?
With an O?
All one word.
Oh, Della Reese.
Della Reese, and then it was like Sinclair Lewis or something. Like, she had like a long, like that was just her first name. And she had a child who also she named Della Reese, who preceded her in death.
Shit. Now I'm Googling what the hell is her full name.
Well, her stage name was Della Reese.
Della Reese Patricia Early.
That's
born it. Born in Michigan and Detroit, baby.
Mm.
When you're the best of friends.
Oh God! Was she the owl in Fox and the Hound?
She was.
Oh my God! That song.
Was that Pearl Bailey?
And she was also in Cotton Club.
She needed to make up her mind, because in the beginning she's like, "Oh, they're the best friends." In the end, she's like, "I knew they hate each other. I said it from the first day." I was like, "What? You need to make up your mind, owl."
I don't recognize that, but maybe
it was Pearl Bailey. Oh. I'm so sorry.
Oh God, Fausto.
But it was funny to get confused for a second. She was the angel from Touched by an Angel. Now she's been touching angels. For real.
Sure.
She sure. was the predecessor. Her show, Touched by an Angel, I guess, was a remake of a Canadian TV show where a dog travels solving mysteries and putting people's lives together, called The Littlest Hobo.
And that's where Touched by an Angel came from?
I have a theory.
It's basically the same premise in some ways.
It's the same premise. Well, it's also Highway to Heaven.
Except that one's a human being, and the other one's a dog.
So there's Touched by an Angel is the last incarnation. There was Michael Landon's Highway to Heaven. And but the original was the Canadian show Touched by The Littlest Hobo, which was a German Shepherd who found his way into people's lives each week. And of course, you had these Canadian character actors who were like, "I'm a drug dealer," and the dog's like, "Woof, woof," you know. And so it was a mixture of Rin Tin Tin, but the dog always got people to confess to their crimes. Or, you know, live a better life. Or
I feel like people back in the day had a lot of faith in animals. You know what I mean? Like, there was Flipper. There was... What the hell was that dog's name?
Lassie.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, Lassie. Yeah,
Buzz, people just Buzz had a McKenzie. Lot of- mm-hmm. The Taco Bell Chihuahua.
Oh, the Mr. Taco Ed. Bell Chihuahua.
I came across a news item today that people have probably been burying their hamsters alive. I guess
forever.
Hamsters are animals that grew up like in a warm climate. I think they originally came from like Turkey, and they so if they're in a cold environment, they'll go into hibernation. So people that have like had their hamster and they think it might be dead, and they just bury it in the backyard, it may have just been cold.
Well, I guess they're helping it hibernate if it's digging under the ground.
But it can't get out.
So Richard Gere is like breathing a sigh of relief saying, "I didn't kill all those hamsters."
It was a gerbil.
Poor Richard Gere in that urban legend. I guess that urban legend.
No, there's no poor Richard Gere. He's a millionaire who's won Sexiest Man Alive and has had all the tail he's ever wanted to.
Yeah.
If I had to trade my life for that kind of millions of dollars because someone thought I put a gerbil up my ass, go, fine.
Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is that story, and I think the one of Rod Stewart drinking
the chalice of cum
are stories
that would explain his voice.
These are stories that are put out by the publicists of someone who's competing against them to tap into people's latent homophobia in order to tarnish the careers of these artists so their clients get more gigs.
Well, Rod Stewart knows exactly who started the
somebody with revenge.
It was and he did it for revenge because I guess they had some kind of encounter and the guy didn't like him. So that's how they had a problem with his family.
The Richard Gere rumor allegedly rumored that Sylvester Stallone started it because they were competing leading male parts.
And that thing's been around since since I was a kid.
Yeah. That's a rumor will never die.
And also too, I think also too, cause he did that role American Gigolo and there was some gayness in that film. And so I think that sometimes it leads people to think, well, if you're gay, you might as well be shoving gerbils up your butt.
Isn't that so fun? It's like anytime people don't like gay people, they always leap to some type of animal abuse. Like we want to marry animals, or gerbils are going up our butts, or it's like, what? Like, if animal is worth it, go to find one gay man who has a deer head in his house. You'll never find it.
Mm.
But I think, it's an interesting phenomena of, like, the idea of using gossip to tarnish an entertainer's career in order to make room for other artists to move in into the gigs and economic space that they create. And I was thinking about this like with Valentina this past year from RuPaul's Drag Race. I don't know if you followed that, but there's a lot of stories about how awful and rotten and mean and cruel and demanding Valentina was. And the one queen was like, she demanded red M&Ms and champagne and roses in her dressing room, the monster, you know? And I'm just like, if you don't like that in a writer of an artist, just scratch it off. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to sign a contract just because an artist demands something to say, look, we can give you a bottle of vodka or a bouquet of daisies or bouquet of flowers. It doesn't have to be a certain thing.
I have to say that Valentina, I somehow have become obsessed with her. Like, I feel like she is like the Michael Jackson of Drag Race, just this like sort of strange human being who like the laws of physics and reality don't apply to them. and she looks amazing and is so like bizarre, like the sort of the same aura that Michael Jackson had. Don't you agree?
Well, I think part of it is from talking to the queens that were on the show, because you and I have a lot of intimate relationships with some of these girls, you know, and like Vivacious is my best friend, and Vivacious and I spend 3 or 4 hours every week just talking about every single thing that we know behind the scenes about it. And one of the things was that a lot of the queens on that episode felt that the producers gave Valentina an unfair advantage, and they resented her for that.
I think, I mean, there's rumors that she did it on purpose because it would, like, make her a legend. People will remember that forever, you know. I don't know. I mean, in reality, it probably makes sense that she was doing really well and didn't think she'd have to lip sync. And then, you know, she didn't learn the words. That's possible, you know.
But I think that was just one of the things. They felt that the producers just kept giving her breaks and giving her
like
more time.
Like, they'd have to wait for her to get ready. Like, nobody else had that opportunity. They're like, well, we're still waiting for Valentina to get ready. And, like, 2 hours later, like, she's still not ready?
Oh, well, I will not comment on that.
Oh.
Oh, I think he knows something.
So there's politics involved. Mateo, it's so good to shoot the breeze with you. And, you know, you're doing so well. And we're just so happy to see you everywhere we turn the channel.
Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me back on.
Oh, yeah. Come do a live podcast sometimes when you're in town. Because I know you still have family here.
I think I'm back in town for Christmas, like the 19th or something. Mm.
Let's do a Christmas special.
I think we'll be on hiatus by then.
Well, we can tape it ahead of time.
But he won't be here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get into town, I think, till like the 20th. Oh, and then I leave the 20th.
Yeah, I'm on an airplane that day. I'm going to Texas to visit my mom.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
And you'll be here in Chicago?
I'm coming to Chicago for Christmas.
I'll be in
Austin. I want to have like a, you know, I have it because I barely drink anymore. I want to have like a classic Boys Town night when I come to Chicago. So I'm calling my two best friends who live there. We're both gay. I was like, I want to do an old school Boys Town, Chi Town night where it's like we pregame to our favorite music, we go to all the bars, we get stupid drunk, and then end up at Taco Burrito Palace at 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you give them an 8x10 headshot of yourself signed, they'll hang it on the wall.
Because I was on Noches con Platanito?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Faustos was hanging up there for years, and they finally took it down?
For about 15 or 16 years, I guess the glue or whatever, mm-hmm. the picture frame broke, so mm-hmm. they threw it away.
And they said, just bring in another one, and we'll hang it up.
They want me to bring a replacement one.
Yeah.
I've never signed a headshot in my life. I wouldn't even know where to print it. Like, I don't even have a printer.
Just go to, like, Kinko's or, like, an office or, like, a Staples.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't want to be drunk in Taco Burrito Palace ordering in terrible Spanish, eating refried beans, and staring at the Photoshopped better version of myself above my head. There's nothing worse than literally seeing a Grindr profile picture and the real life in real life. You know, I can't do that.
I'll vouch for you that you're just as cute and adorable in person as you are in your photos.
I mean, sure.
But you see, this is the one thing I know, want a bone to pick with you. You do the same expression in like 90% of your photos.
I mean, yeah. If you don't, I mean,
it's like you ate a cute but bitter pill, and it's making an expression on your face like of melancholia.
I know. People really don't like when I do a face, and I'm like, all right, then just don't follow me. I don't care.
But can you just relax? I mean, I'm sure your mother is like, please, Mateo, we need to take a family picture for the holidays.
No, first of all, not Italian families don't do that. And secondly, my mother is just more concerned about why I'm not wearing clothes. She can give a shit about my neck up.
Aren't you cold when you're wearing that kind of thing?
Nothing. Yeah, of course.
Well, the next thing is that you have like a brother who was like, he for years was sort of a pinup model, you know, buff guy, hung around gay bars and in his underwear. And so for you, this is like much more modest than what Vince has, you know, done, right?
It's all just the family business, I guess.
So you're actually the more conservative of all your brothers and sisters.
No, I would say I'm not conservative at all of my family.
But the most clothed of all your siblings.
Oh yeah. Well, my brother now probably more than me. I mean, now he's, you know, got like a really good job and lives in San Francisco and has a husband. Like, you know, he's not like working at Minibar anymore. So I think
no one's working at Minibar anymore.
Is it closed?
It's gone.
It went from mini to micro.
Wait, what happened to Minibar?
It's
Mini
just
Bar?
An
What's...
empty vessel. Wow.
Is it's, it? Oh, my God.
It's gone,
it's
baby.
Ding dong. The witch is dead.
Now you can say all the things you didn't like about Minibar back in the day.
I never went to Minibar. I went there like twice my whole life.
Well, that's why it's out of business.
We were walking by there once and Faust, what did you say? You said, oh, nobody goes in there anymore because they're all assholes or something. What did you say?
I don't remember what I said, but then my phone started ringing, and I guess the manager was somebody that follows me on social media.
And heard you say
and
it.
And the window was open.
And they heard you
and
say
And I thought
it,
like, that the glass, there was like, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like literally saying to his face, like, this bar is stupid. You know?
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, that's why, God, I hate that.
And he was like,
bar.
So, his feelings were so hurt by that. And I was just like, oh, well, you're just the manager. It's not your bar. You know, it's like,
right.
It'll be okay.
I like Progress. Of course, I always say I don't want to go to Sidetrack. I end up at Sidetrack. And Roscoe, I feel like I'm too old to go to Roscoe's now.
Roscoe's is kind of turning into like the RuPaul's Drag Race gay bar, you know?
And yeah, because all the girls go and perform there. Mm-hmm.
So if you want to see them, that's the place to go.
But there's a lot of like gay bars in Andersonville that are completely new. And
really?
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, they're fun, but they don't have necessarily the population density that some of those Boys Town bars have, for sure.
Yeah, because I mean, I remember Spin is gone, and then it was replaced with some tequila place, and now that's gone. Every time I go to Boys Town, it's always like, oh, like the staples are just Roscoe's and Sidetrack. They're the only ones left. And Hydrate, but I never go to Hydrate.
Well, the nature of gay neighborhoods is they are always kind of evolving, changing, and moving. You know, the gay part of town used to be like Clark and Division. And then it kind of slowly moved up into Boys Town in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. See, I would love to know what Boys Town in the 80s was like.
I'm sure it was wild.
You know, when Chuck Renslow, he's the guy who did IML. He basically like invented the concept of a Leatherman and leather fetish. As a photographer, he was like a pioneer in so many things. Before Stonewall, he was running gay bars. You know, he did Man's Country, which is clothing at doors. This week. Right.
I think at the end of the year,
one of the world's oldest gay bathhouses in our neighborhood in Andersonville is closing forever. And they're demolishing it.
I remember that. Uh-huh. It was a place. It was like a white brick wall with like rainbow lights. Right.
Correct.
And very ominous, like, you know, like like a mystery. Like, what is this place? Just, you know.
Oh, we know you went inside there.
I've never been. The only time I went in a bathhouse was Steamworks once, because they have a free HIV testing on the like third floor.
Every Tuesday from 4 to 7.
Yeah, so my boyfriend and I went. The Howard Brown, was that what it was called?
Hobro.
Yeah, and so we would go up there, not regularly, just once, and got tested.
And so anyways, they're demolishing that stuff. And we went to Chuck's memorial service, and they had a lot of video and photo footage of gay bars in the 70s. And the thing we all forget is that everybody smoked back in the day. And these bars weren't these, you know, really commercially successful enterprises that they are today. They were very modest businesses. And they, you know, they seem really like...
There were holes in the wall, a lot of them.
A lot of them were holes in the walls, and not this glamorous thing that we think... When we think of it like a gay bar, we see like even the bar Stonewall portrayed in films. It's much, much more glamorous than it was in real life.
Well, I perform at Stonewall pretty regularly, and it's not the most glamorous bar in the world. But
they mop the floors, they have lighting, they have clean glasses to serve you the drinks in, the bathrooms are cleaned, you know, it's certainly like something that back in the day, it was a struggle just to keep the floors mopped, you know?
Have you ever seen Fran Lebowitz's documentary, Public Speaking?
No.
Oh my God, both of you have to watch that immediately. But she talks all about gay bars in the 60s and what it meant to be gay. And she even said, she's like, it's so strange to me because being gay was not only, you know, considered wrong, it was illegal. She's like, you know, if you were at a gay bar and it was raided, your IDs were stolen and printed in the front page of the New York Times, and regardless of what your job was, you were fired. And this was, you know, deemed as like, you know, noble. She's like, now gay bars, they have valet, they have windows, you can sit outside. She's like, it would shock me to know that in the 60s, the thing that I was doing that is not allowed anymore inside places is smoking. She's like, at least you could smoke in the bars back then. She's such a big smoker.
Well, Mateo Lane, thank you so much for coming and joining us today and shooting the breeze. It's really nice to catch up with you.
Thanks so much. I hope I didn't say anything stupid. Now I'm going to be afraid all day that I said something horrible. I'll be in the cover.
Just say it's all stupid. It's fine.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Well, are you just worried that you're going to get retribution because you spoke out against homophobia and racism?
I mean, no. I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to say. I don't know what I feel. I'm insecure.
Just revel in your insecurities today and give them a big, long hug.
Okay, that sounds good. I'll watch the British Bake Off and get my mind off
things. Oh, I'm watching the latest season that's on Netflix.
I just finished it. It's fabulous. Fabulous.
I have a little crush on the ginger, and I'm sorry.
I do too. I thought he was really cute.
I just saw one of the other cute guys go today. I'm not going to say who it is for the people who don't know, but
yeah,
I'm watching it.
It's always heartbreaking when somebody attractive gets eliminated from someone you really bonded emotionally.
Was just not good.
It was a flat moose.
You have to have a very well aerated moose.
Yes.
To make it scrummy.
Well,
you have a great holiday, okay? Have a happy Thanksgiving.
I will. Happy Thanksgiving,
give Bob
guys.
Our best and remind Bob that his subscription has lapsed and he can renew that at feastoffun.com/plus.
Okay, I will.
Thank you.
All right, take care, guys. Bye. Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Mateo Lane lives in New York City, folks. He's a Chicago hometown girl. You can check him out on YouTube, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, Late Night with Seth Meyers. Mm. You can watch him on Logo doing the Fire Island recaps, which are really a lot of fun. And for people who are not familiar with Fire Island, there was a TV show that Logo did as sort of the gay answer to the Jersey Shore. Mm-hmm. And it was produced by Mark Consuelos and
Kelly Ripa.
Kelly Ripa.
Mm-hmm. You know, from Regis and Kelly. Well, now it's just the Kelly show, right? Or Kelly and somebody else now.
There's always like a power struggle because I think the guy from American Idol, I forget his name, the star.
Ryan Seacrest?
Ryan Seacrest was trying to wrestle the show away from her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, she wasn't going to give that up.
That Ryan Seacrest is a mean little sissy.
He's got all sorts of, he's got the Kim Kardashian money. So he's okay.
He and what was the guy who runs Logo? I'm blanking out on his name right now. The Logo executive who does the talk show, who hates Kathy Griffin.
Oh, he's Bravo, honey. Andy
Bravo,
Cohen.
Bravo. Thank Andy you. Cohen. Andy Cohen and Ryan Seacrest are like people you do not want to get on their bad side.
and everybody, yeah. Kathy Griffin wants everyone to know that Andy Cohen has a little dick.
Oh, that's, you know, listen, it doesn't matter what listen, the size of it.
It doesn't matter.
Insulting people for having a small dick is dumb, you know?
You can do a lot. You can do a lot with whatever you have, you can do a lot with.
How does she know his dick is small?
She shared a letter from somebody who had sex with, she's like, somebody had sex with Andy Cohen allegedly in like 1989 or something like that. And he's like, Kathy, I support you. And I just want you to know this is my experience with him. And he had a small penis, basically.
She's immature.
Happy to share that on Twitter. Yeah, it's pretty immature, Kathy. But it's just I'm laughing because Kathy feels like it's important to share this. I'm not laughing because whatever Andy has or doesn't have. I'm laughing because Kathy thinks that it's important to share this. And I'm just kind of like, why?
You know, what the world needs now is love, sweet love.
Right.
I think Kathy Griffin brought up some serious issues about astroturfing and the way that TMZ and the gay guy who runs TMZ was in bed with the Trump campaign and how a lot of the celebrity journalism is really used to sort of make people vote against their own interests. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, like her bringing up this, like, you know, you're a bad lay because you have a little dick. It really is.
Also wasn't a good lay. The guy didn't enjoy. I like this experience. And then he felt like Andy treated him like shit afterwards.
Well, and, you know, selfishness in the sack, you know, whoever gives a bad blowjob, cast the first stone. We're all guilty of being, you know, not as giving as we could be when it comes to affairs of the heart.
That was funny. I was talking to a drag queen in Austin when we were there, something about blowjobs and teeth. And I said, you know, I don't mind it when somebody tells me to mind my teeth when I'm giving them a blowjob, because at least I know I'm probably sucking on a really big dick.
Guys, we want to thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. Remember, we have a store with fabulous merchandise, t-shirts, pins, bumper stickers, recipes, coupons, gift certificates, all kinds of goodies for your holiday present gift giving. If you know a friend who wants to listen to amazing 13 years of podcasts with in-depth interviews with comedians and drag queens and LGBT artists and entertainers, give them a Feast of Fun Plus membership. Go to feastoffun.com/plus and sign up today. Or if you need any assistance in giving that present, you can write to us, mail@feastoffun.com, and we'll set them up.
Also, too, you're probably going to do a lot of shopping this season on Amazon. And if you'd like to click through our links, you can just go to feastoffun.com/affiliates, and then it'll have a little thing that says, follow this link to shop on Amazon. And we get a little tiny, tiny percentage of whatever it is you buy. But, you know, if everybody uses the link, it'll go a long way to support the show and to ensure that this show will be around for its 14th season next year.
It's a tiny little bit. It's a little Christmas bell. And our incredibly strange Christmas music volume 8, 9,
something like that,
is coming this season. If you have a song that you want us to play in our incredibly, you know, rare, obscure, original holiday themed music that you think deserves a second listen, send it to us, mail@feastoffun.com, or hit me up on social media. Of course, we're Feast of Fun everywhere. And I am Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And you can message us anytime you like. Thank you guys so much for listening. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.